To introduce our main speaker moment. For this evening, John
Beef. Everybody here tonight had one. At some level, there was a moment where you made a decision, even if it was just tonight, to show up at the SoCal Speakers meeting.
My name is John, and I'm an alcoholic.
And
let's
every
just get
day,
the tie
I
thing
suppose,
out of the way
we get
right
to
now,
make
okay.
that decision.
It's a clip-on. It's the half-measures bow tie.
I'm so grateful.
But it's got some reaction.
I'm so grateful for the man I've become behind learning the principles of this program.
I'm prone to lean towards
the very simple ideas at first.
Didn't mean to do your job.
Suit up, show up, get in the car.
Thank God we have a timekeeper tonight.
Be in service.
I'm just going to leave that right
there.
Clean
house.
You'll be thanking God too here in about 40 minutes.
I don't know. I don't know how this works, but like I share what I can, you know.
Outside.
And I absolutely believe
these, so
beyond the shadow of a doubt that
eat.
I've received the gift that Alcoholics Anonymous promises
and I went
us
back to the men's
by working
room.
All 12 steps. I believe absolutely that that's touched my life. Tragically, all the guys
I wanted to see
are stuck
how she
on
said
step
that.
Four. Go figure.
I went back to the men's room and I was
because I did
washing
too.
My
I
hands.
Mean, I understand.
And
I got stuck on step
said
four. It was terrifying.
It was terrifying. Which know? Is loosely this. It's basically
who wants to
this.
Admit that stuff
for me,
out loud?
God help me to carry.
But I'm convinced today that I became in a way. Well, I have become
have
more the man
it.
That I always wanted to be.
And if you can't
I'm not
do
afraid
that,
of
just
you
help
anymore.
Me to be funny.
Well, I should be afraid of you guys. But out in public, I'm, you know, I'm not that afraid anymore.
And neither one's
I don't feel like
real
an
well.
Alien or like somebody dropped me off on the wrong planet anymore.
An alcoholic walks into a bar.
Days. But I know where to take those feelings.
There's a
today.
Sign over the bar that says all
to a
you
quiet
can drink
place.
For $1.
A place of prayer. A place of meditation.
The alcoholic says I'll have $2
safety.
Worth.
And like Mike shared tonight in his talk, that when it's really bad,
and if you're laughing tonight, you might be in the right place.
Call another alcoholic, because so many times tonight, while I've been sharing,
I know
I've been seeing
I am.
You do this. You know,
I want to thank.
We just know we know each other.
You guys, first of all, for having me here to speak at your meeting tonight,
helping another can really have a
profound
effect.
I want to
thank
Lori for cornering me and taking me hostage and making me do this. And convincing the rest of the trusted
immunity.
Servants here that it would be okay.
From the next hit, pill, drink, fix, drug, whatever you want to call it.
I want to thank my friend Mike,
one
who I was actually just messing around with earlier
another.
When I shouted out in the
Mike,
middle of the meeting so rudely,
see,
I have more
I
time than you.
Did read this book.
We're talking about months. Mike and I have been
and I
partners
love it.
Since the very
I love
beginning.
It today because
it's a
once I surrendered and I said, okay, my way is not
when we
working.
Stay. It's a miracle when we stay. And
maybe
we lift each other up
all of
because
a sudden,
we don't do recovery
over the course
alone.
Of the last, what's my sobriety
a lot day? Of you may have thought that if you just came in here
March,
and you got that big blue book, like a cookbook, that would be the recipe, and you would just
then,
tuck that under your
the
arm
willingness crept open
take
more
off,
and
you wouldn't
more
need
and
us
came
anymore.
In and it
but
soaked
that's not
through
how
me,
it works.
And I can feel that.
And I want to thank you for being my road
spirit, and the promises coming true, and they're still coming true today.
Forcing me into your car many, many times.
It's a journey. You never arrive.
Sometimes the most spiritual thing you can hear in early recovery is get in the car.
I wish you the best on your journey. I wish you willingness. I wish you peace. And
that's what we did, man. We would drive
to
me. Los Angeles
in the form
and
of
Arizona
not only
and New
security
Mexico,
and safety, but
we'd
love.
We'd go to odd places that didn't
maybe,
even have like
say,
utilities and
a bit
stuff.
Of a spiritual
camping.
Experience. My name is John. I'm an alcoholic.
There's some people
thanks
camping this weekend.
Share.
They said that at Lake Henshaw. Is that right? You guys do that a couple of times a year. I guess that's our version of like the Stagecoach Festival or something. Anyway, Mike and I did a lot of those things together. I love you, brother. And, man, you know what? For both our sakes, I hope you never catch up with me. But I couldn't have done this without you. My sponsors here tonight, oddly, Mike and I share the same sponsor at this time. Although, to hear Mike tell it, if you're his sponsor, you wind up moving. So I have no idea what's going to happen for you. And there's no pressure, by the way, when your sponsor's sitting with his arms folded in the front row. Are you just here to referee, or what's going on? There's There were a lot of things that I thought I might say tonight, and they've all left my head. And honestly, I never really know what it is that's going to come out. And in a way, the funny idea of the speaker's prayer is true. And you hope, you know, that what the book tells us to do is share in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. What it's like today as a result of these steps and these traditions and having a spiritual experience. I'm here with my partner tonight, Leslie. I love you. Thank you. Thank you for who you are in my life. We talked on the way down here. I said, what should I talk about tonight? I wasn't really wanting an answer. Faux humility. And she said, spiritual experience. Well, shit. Maybe. Who knows? Who knows? I never know where it's going to go. What I can tell you is this. I earned my seat here. I'm an alcoholic to the core. That once I start drinking, I cannot predict with any degree of certainty my behavior, where I will wind up, or who I'll wind up with. There's a couple of heads shaking out there. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? Mm-hmm. And it's funny, we do have a lot in common when you really get down to the nitty-gritty. I appreciate this meeting for another reason, too. There's a lot of tolerance here for the idea that we did other things. If you survived the 70s and the 80s, you probably survived some other things besides just alcohol. I did. I'm not afraid to tell you that. On the other hand, I have a deep and abiding respect and love for Alcoholics Anonymous, and this program, which saved my life, as it's outlined in the first 164 pages of the big book. All the directions are right there, the black parts. And it was hard at first because I would come to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and these were some of my first sober resentments too, by the way. And I would come to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they would read from the podium. They would say, and I thought you were talking to me, of course, if you think you have a problem with other substances, you're most welcome here, but please limit your sharing to the topic of tonight's meeting, which, of course, was alcohol. Now, if my secrets keep me sick, what I heard at that moment was, you guys are asking me to keep all that other stuff a secret. And it was some of my first resentments, my problems in the beginning with Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I was going to find a problem with you all in the very beginning. Because I didn't really need to be here because I wasn't like you. Sure, I had a little problem with alcohol and cocaine and Tylenol and Secanol and Tylenol and you name it all, I did it all. But the point was, I wasn't as bad as you. Anybody feel that way when you first got here? I'm not a real alcoholic. I'm not in the street. I'm not in the gutter. Because I'd seen that. Now, I was homeless. Or they like to call it couch surfing. You know, that's what I was doing. But truly, I was homeless. And, you know, I did a lot of things. Well, I don't know if this is relevant, but I was a musician. I was a musician in the 80s. I was a guitar player in a band in the 80s. Now, in the 80s, besides alcohol, we did other things. Usually it involved wearing a gold spoon around your neck. Spoon. Just in case, you know. Oh. Anybody remember the bullet? But I digress. So in the 80s, there wasn't a lot of guitar in music. It was kind of like, you know, dunk, Depeche Mode. Dunk, Tears for Fears. And parachute pants, of course, with zippers everywhere. And that's what I did. And I had the time of my life. And when I would use and I would drink, it would feel like I was soaring. And I had this job. By the way, talk about ego. We all deal with our ego at some level when we come in here. A leveling of pride and a leveling of ego is a part of the 12 steps and how we begin to heal and pull things into focus. And, of course, I had this job where every 5 minutes, everybody would stop and go, Now, imagine if you're at your desk job at the phone company, and every time you finish something on the computer, everybody in the office stood up and went, yes! That make you feel pretty damn good about yourself. So my head is like, you know. And so is my hair, by the way. Aquanet, the sweet mullet hairdo, was so good. And for a while, that was the time of my life. And I know if we get honest with each other, when we take our first drinks, what keeps us drinking for the effect? That first love affair that we had with it, where it goes down kind of maybe smooth, maybe warm, maybe something tickles our inside, and something happens. And that something that happens is I no longer felt like I was dropped off on the wrong planet. I don't feel like an alien anymore, right? Because that's how I felt my entire childhood and growing up in social situations, in school. You know, the only place I was sure I was safe was with my record player. Records. For you young people, that's a vinyl thing, spins. And in my room with a hairbrush or a tennis racket in front of my dresser, and I was safe there in that little bubble. But man, going out in the world was terrifying. And what I guess I'm getting at is that my brain acts differently. My brain isn't like other people's. I guess what we call around here normies, normal people. I think differently about. I still do, by the way. There was this awful story in the news recently about a woman, I think it was in Iowa, I don't know, at a meat processing plant. They made cold cuts and she fell into the meat grinder. Did you guys hear about that? Some of you heard about it, right? The first thing that goes through my mind is, my baloney has a first name. Too soon? If you're laughing, you might be in the right place. That really happened, actually. And I'm just admitting it here so I don't have to tell you later. You know, we have fun around here. I need to be clear. If you're new tonight, welcome. If you're new and you're frightened, I was when I first came into the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was like, "This is weird, man. This is weird." And it was. It didn't feel comfortable. It didn't feel natural. And it wasn't like anything I would think of doing for myself, you know. But there's a part in the book where Bill writes, "If you know, there's all the serious stuff we deal with." He writes, "We've been speaking to you of very serious things, sometimes tragic things. But if the newcomer could see no joy in our existence, they wouldn't want it. And so we laugh around here, and we camp, and we drive weird places, and we laugh at inappropriate things. But something about that experience together unifies us, which I'm understanding at some level is pretty important. My personal recovery depends on our unity. And if I feel a part of this group, if I peel a part of something here where I never did before, then I'm healing. You gave me my first jobs sober. Commitments, like at the meeting, you know, setting up. Who sets up at this meeting? A couple of you do. I know you do. Yeah. Thank you. Literature, right? Speaker getter. Cake person. Coffee maker. And of course, the wonderful work that's done here with the sign language and so forth and so on. Yeah. Yeah, let's have a nice little hand for that, by the way. So the unity of this program is what actually helps me to stick around. I feel a part of, for the first time, you guys gave me my first jobs, my first sense of purpose. You made me feel useful when I felt useless. Pretty simple equation, just by being of service. And Mike talked about that in his talk tonight, that he had done service work. There are several people in this room who have done service work, very serious, long hours of service work, in steamy, dark places where we counted money and talked about, you know, traditions and steps and did stuff like that and traveled together, world travel together, you know. It was an amazing journey, and I'm glad mine's over. And I'm glad to be back here. But I did service early on. Like, I would go to the meeting, you know. When I first got sober, one of the commitments was the ash can guy, the cigarette butt guy. And, but back then you could still smoke in meetings. There was the smoking side and there was the non-smoking side. Not like it made a difference. Smoke. Across, you just had to sort of sit low to stay out of it. And all I can tell you is, again, those were the first moments that I felt like I belonged. I remember when they suggested I be the greeter. Number one, you have to show up early. That's a problem for me as an alcoholic. You have to show up early, and you stand at the door, and you stick your hand out to everybody who's coming through that door. The lady who did the basket with the tickets in it tonight, and a couple folks by the door greeting people as they came in. You know what happens? You get to know people. They get to know you. You get to know them by your first name. It's awesome. But I didn't realize that's what was happening. I thought it was just a mundane commitment. You know, they'd be like, oh, it'll be good for you. Go do that. It'll be good for you. This is a very welcoming fellowship, by the way, in my first days and my first meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would come in here and I was quiet at first, but then once I started to get a little sober and I started to understand maybe a little bit about the steps and a little bit about the tradition, well, enough to be dangerous, okay, I would share in the meeting. My name is John, I'm an alcoholic, wah, 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 wah. And people would stop me after the meeting. They would say, keep coming back. Very welcoming fellowship. You guys were awesome. Made me feel right at home. Keep coming back, John. Which I now know means you just said something incredibly stupid. Keep coming back. Right? You know what I'm talking about now. And thus we grow. We keep coming back. We go to the meetings and we learn from each other's experience, strength, and hope. Now, I want to say that my story is pretty normal. Like on the alcoholic bottom scale or whatever, you know, I'm probably like running down the middle lane. But there's, you know, there's like, hang on a second. We need some oxygen over here. She'll be all right. So my story's, you know, it's probably not much difference than yours. I did enough to get myself into a lot of fucking trouble. I used the F word to emphasize trouble. And it was. It was trouble. It was alcohol-fueled days on end, long, usually winding up naked in a bathroom, or taping the windows and the doors shut, stuffing a towel under the door of the bathroom, whatever it was, you get the idea. It was not, I was a vision for you, right? And that hot, steamy, sweaty mullet thing going on, sucked in rib cage. You know, there's a word for that. It was tweaker. Okay? I drank alcoholically, but I was a tweaker, and I suffered all of the psychoses that goes along with the combination of that alcohol and the fuel that the methamphetamine brought. And I'm not ashamed to share that tonight, and I see a lot of heads shaking out there, because the purpose is to share our experience, strength, and hope in a way that maybe, and they read it tonight, our primary purpose is to share with the newcomer something that maybe would help them to relate. Bill writes in the book, Pass It On, that the purpose of an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting is to give an example of the steps, basically, how to work the program to the newcomer. That's the purpose of an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Did you know that? Go read it and pass it on. There's some great books that some of us never get to. Yeah, it only took me 5 years to actually get to the big book. Because I was the guy that I talked about earlier who came in here and thought just by being next to you in a chair at the meeting, or, you know, by showing up, somehow by osmosis, I was going to get the things that you had, the BMW. I was going to get a successful career, a great girlfriend, you know, whatever it is that you view as success early on. Well, I was undershooting the mark for sure. And but I wanted what you had, and I saw only those things. I didn't really understand the idea of spiritual experience. I didn't understand of being spiritually whole or filled up with something other than booze and drugs or food and sex, whatever it is that we do to heal ourselves, you know, in those ugly moments in our alcoholism. And even sober, I was still seeking external. I don't know, what do you want to call it? A fix. Sober. And this is the next part of this talk is not something I suggest for everybody. This is important information. I don't suggest that you do it your way around here long enough to actually have another bottom sober, but that's what I did. Now, it's also written in our literature that no human power could have relieved our addiction. Our alcoholism, our disease, our discomfort. No human power could have remedied that, but I was going to test that theory. And so one of those early meetings, I found the angriest girl in the room. She was sitting in the back in the half-measure section with her arms crossed, slouched down in the chair. I'll never forget it. She was perfect for me. We went to coffee after the meeting and talked about God. And I married her. That is a true story. It lasted 90 days. And that's a true story. And I still have the paperwork that you have to file. And somebody told me to put a statement in the Union Tribune. And I did that, you know. And it was a nightmare. No human power could have relieved our addiction. So relationships, or what we like to call dating in early recovery, it's strongly suggested by people like sponsors that we don't do that in early recovery because we don't even know how to have a healthy relationship with ourselves. What I finally figured out is that dating in early recovery isn't dating. You just lose your turn. Well, there's some people shifting in their chair out there right now. You might be in the right place. All of these things I'm sharing with you are true, and Mike's been with me every step of the way. I haven't told a lie yet. We do some crazy stuff around here. But in my recovery, that emotional bottom. And I haven't even talked about what led up to the methamphetamine alcoholic fueled thing to this point. I'm just talking about getting in the recovery. It was insane. But we hang on to each other. And let me also clear one other thing up. It's not like you're going to walk arm in arm with everybody who's new in your class of 92 off into the sunset of recovery together. Doesn't happen that way, man. This is a serious disease. This disease of alcoholism takes out many, many more than you could possibly count. If you're here tonight, you're one of the lucky ones. Whether you know it or not,
Welcome. We've been waiting for you. And it's all here for you in the steps. And I used to hear people say that from the podium in the early meetings while I was paying attention to her in the back row. And it would sound like this, wah, 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 wah. Rarely have we seen a person, wah, 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 stood at the turning point, wah, 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 wah. That's about all I could hear. And I just kept showing up and showing up. And I made a lot of mistakes. And finally, I got desperate enough, sober, behind those emotional bottoms and those countless vain attempts to prove that I could do what you were doing and have what you had, doing it my way. And I could not. And so the thing I want to share with you tonight is once I finally got desperate enough, sober, I started working on the steps the way they were outlined. And I got a sponsor, a real sponsor for the first time. Not this guy, another guy. And he took me through the book, and he pointed out things in a way that only an insane person could understand. He just had a way of saying things, you know. Like he would say things to me, not out of the book. He would just paraphrase. He would say, you know, John, 99% of the shit we feel about other people has very little to do with them. Now, that stopped me in my tracks. I had to think about that. Very little to do with them. What do you mean? They're the problem. I'm not the problem. They're the problem. If she hadn't have done this, or that employer of mine hadn't have done that, or the IRS didn't do that, or the DMV, because I didn't have a license when I got here. How many of you can relate to that? Right? That's also the time in my life where I learned what the term court abstract meant. But everybody else was the problem, right? But Wayne had this way of saying, well, you know, 99% of the stuff we feel about other people has very little to do with them. Oh. And then I would stop and ponder that. And progress was made, little by little. Progress was made in a way that I couldn't necessarily hear it by reading the book or having somebody take the book and read it at me. Does that make sense? Now, I want to be clear. Today, I have a tremendous love and respect and admiration for the text of the first 164 pages and other parts of the big book literature and the 12 and 12 and other literature of Alcoholics Anonymous. But back then, it was like a sleeping pill. It was like, you know, anesthesia. It wasn't something that I enjoyed. So when somebody would talk to me on my terms, I felt like, okay, well, I can do this now. This is something I'm willing to think about and try. And so the little, I don't know what you want to call it, ounce of willingness. I picked that term on purpose. Of willingness creaked open. And really, when it comes to a spiritual experience, that's all that my higher power that I've selected today asks of me. Simply that I seek. Simply that I remain open-minded, right? Open-minded. We try to be as honest as we can. In the beginning, it's not always easy, but we try. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. The three amazing, critical, indispensable parts of this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, which take us down a path of progress. Not perfection, progress, right? And so when I creaked my mind open to the idea that, you know, there could be a higher power that could restore me to sanity because it was happening for you and it was happening for you and it was happening for others, that maybe it could happen for me too. And then that door of willingness and open-mindedness opened a little more. And then I thought, well, okay, so if this is working for me, maybe I should try that prayer stuff in, third step prayer. I remember it was suggested to me, write it down. If you don't know it, write it down. I, of course, now being an expert at the big book, took the book and said, of course the wording is quite optional. My sponsor said, no, write it down. Keep it simple, right? Keep it simple. It's all right there. It's just written right there. Today in our men's group, that's all we say. That's the only prayer we say to close the meeting is the third step prayer. And because I wrote it down, on a postcard, and I placed it down by the first layer of my mattress in my sober living, which meant I had to get on my knees to read it. That was the idea. I learned it. I learned it by heart. And it became quite important to me. And then I had a little book for meditation, because I didn't know how to meditate at all. Meditation was like the longest 5 minutes of my day. I would go, the beauty of God is in me. The grace of God surrounds me. Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. That's what would happen in my head. If you're laughing, you might be in the right place. Because it wasn't easy at first. Today it's a lot easier. And, you know, I love what Mike shared about thanking the universe, his higher power, every day for waking him up and calling him to action and giving him the gift of sobriety. If you're new, this is a trivia question for the new people tonight. It's kind of rhetorical, so you don't have to shout out the answer unless your ego's as big as mine. And what's the world record for sobriety? One day, 24 hours, exactly. So Mike woke up this morning, I woke up this morning, and really, we got the same amount of time, because today is the gift that we're given, this daily reprieve, this one opportunity to live our life a different way than we used to live before, practicing principles that have been outlined for us in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. God, I hope I'm pointing at the right side. Yeah, okay, good. It's like a stage left, stage right thing. You know, I mean, I don't know how to express my gratitude. And it's funny because I think that other people get this stuff. I've often heard it said around the rooms, like, everybody should have to practice some kind of program like this. You know, EST, some TED talk that would just sort of cover all of this for everybody so that we all, like, treated each other well and behaved in, you know, principally and stuff. But there are actually some assholes out there who just sort of get it and still can behave like assholes. I can't. I cannot afford to live dishonestly. I cannot afford to live intoxicated. I am allergic to alcohol and other substances. Literally, physically allergic to that stuff. Because it sets in cycle or in motion a cycle that I can't predict with any degree of certainty at all what's going to happen. You know, I have this reaction. I break out in spots like Dallas and Boston. I go places and do things that nobody could have ever predicted, you know. Half naked. Did anybody here ever have the tree people? There's a few of you. Yeah, the tree people. They always get away, by the way. Even alcoholics get those visions, I don't know what you want to call them, but, you know, when we drink enough, when we do enough of anything, it's going to alter our consciousness and our way of seeing the world and perceiving the world. And for a while, in the beginning, that was necessary for me. I felt better when I drank. It eased all of that anxiousness inside of me. What I find today is I feel better when I pray. I feel better when I'm not living in a lie, when I'm keeping it real and I'm keeping it honest. I feel better today when I am morally straight with my partner and when I am morally straight with my finances, for example. Oh man, did I have financial insecurity when I got to the program. I had self-esteem issues, not only from feeling like an alien as a kid, but also from, well, this is sort of backtracking a little bit, but I became a dad. When I was wearing parachute pants and I had the sweet mullet hairdo, I became a father to a beautiful boy. Beautiful boy. And all that boy knew was that he needed me. And I want to share this for some of the dads out there tonight. Or parents. You know, we all come from different places. That recovery makes a lot of things possible. And in the beginning of my recovery, I had lost my family. Imagine that. They had had enough of me.
They didn't want to be around me anymore. I smelled funny. I acted funny. And I remember that the plan at the time, in my marriage at the time, to my son's mother was, let's move. Let's get out of where we are. This place is killing us. It's killing you. And I'm thinking, that's a great idea. Because they're the problem. They're the problem. It's the problem. Right? Let's get out of here. We're going to move 800 miles north to her mother's house. And that will solve all of our problems. And we'll make a new life. And I was in my band at the time, and I had a few contracts that I had to finish up, you know, with the band. They didn't really need a guitar player, but I did it anyway. And I got busy, you know. My wife and my kid, they went up north, and they set up house, and I got busy. And I think that was October, and by December, she called down, and she said, you know what, don't come. And, of course, what do you think as an alcoholic? The first thing I did when she said, don't come, I got on a plane and I went up there. Because now it's serious, right? I was getting away with it for 3 months. Now it's serious. I better go. I'm only sharing this family story with you because it's important for some of us to know that when recovery is possible, everything exponentially out from there is possible. So I go up and I screw up and I get up there. We were talking about this at dinner. It's so important to me, but I don't always share it. But I get up there and I never see her. She ghosted on me the whole time we were up there. She's like, if you want to see your kid, though, he's at